Hi, and welcome to episode 63 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars and Stalkerville, and joining me to try and put me off during my intros this week are writer, artist, and creator of the ongoing superhero web comic Vanguard, which is amazing at the moment, by the way. It's Mr. Daniel Butcher.
Hello, thank you, Vince. Cheers.
All right. And the man who, in one of our conversations earlier, away from the show, got to refer to as the stump of the group, it's Tony Esmond.
Oi, rogue pooper.
Oh, yes, he is the rogue pooper, Tony Esmond.
Yeah, I did a shit on it. That's what someone did a picture of me from work. They thought it was funny.
Travelling the wastes of New Earth having a crap.
That's me. Yeah.
Oh, dear God. And before we... Before we make him run away in fear, I think it's time to introduce this week's guest. This week we're joined by a writer whose book Sleeping Dogs we've raved about on this show.
Yep.
Not too long ago, actually. And now he's back with the soon-to-be-unleashed crazy cyborg spy thriller, Alex Automatic. It's Fraser Campbell. Welcome to the show, Fraser.
Ooh. Welcome, Fraser.
Hello, Fraser.
Yep, speaking of shit.
Oh, that's the segue of the week, isn't it?
Nice to be here.
Nice to have you. That was the funniest "you just held it together" intro that I've heard for a while.
I know. I think everyone's
had to clench to stop myself laughing too much.
You had to clench.
Yeah.
Oh. Do that?
I've been aiming a snow with a pencil.
Oh. This week we thought we'd introduce the guest before we scare him away.
To last week's mess.
Because we just start talking nonsense. Everyone's had a long week, and after a long week, there's nothing better than just talking about comics to finish off the week, is there?
There isn't, is there?
Yeah.
That's not a segue, is it?
No, that's not a segue.
No. Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it could be. It should have been.
Doing segues in his sleep now.
Yeah, do you do them at home? With Mrs. Vincent, you go, I drove past the supermarket and they were selling milk, thinking of milk. Can I have a cup of tea, please? Do you do that sort of thing?
I've done it before. Now I was about to say, no, I don't do it, but I have tried to blag a cup of tea before. It's far less successful than the ones I do on this show.
I pretend I'm from HR at work, and so I'm allowed to do eyesight tests. And then I do, what letter's this? What letter's this? And then it's a letter T, and I go, what about this? And they go, T. And I went, that's very kind of you, T, thanks.
Oh, you're one of those.
Yeah.
My mum's the elder, I'm having a lovely dinner tonight. And they said, what are you having? I said, oh, have you making one a cup of tea?
I say, I've got those chores to do. And they go, what chores? And I'll just have a pint of lager.
It's quality. That's not good.
Like the oldest jokes ever written in the world.
Can I just step in and say I don't have any beverage blags on the go at all?
I thought that was a segue coming there, but you can pitch to my Kickstarter.
There you go. Yeah. I just don't have you. I don't have your professionalism, guys.
What? Oh my god.
Professionalism. But speaking of professionalism, it's time for the professional to talk about comics. Tony, what do you want to talk about this week?
How was the cinema today, Vince, by the way? It was all right, wasn't it?
It was brilliant. I'm going to talk about that more later. But just because I did one tweet talking about how I went to the cinema, Tony's attacking me as if I'm just blitzing.
It was
social...
quite an emphatic tweet.
I was excited about what I had watched. All right.
I didn't know that. Before that. Movie.
Hey? Look, just talk about some comics, you bastard.
Okay. I got a package through the post today, or yesterday, very exciting, from Emma at No Brows. Very kind of her to send it to me, and it is the book Obadon, On the Wings of the World. And it is a 184-page hardback, full colour, and it's only $15.99. It's written by Fabien Grillot and drawn by Jeremy Royer. I think it's originally in French or Belgium, but it's a translation by Nobrow. Absolutely beautiful. Like an amazing. Do you see the pictures I posted of them, didn't you?
Yes, it did look quite special.
Fantastic.
Yeah, just amazing. I mean, they really know how to pick them at Nobrow. This is sort of, what, my fifth, sixth review of one of their books, probably, over the time of the show.
Yeah, you are sponsored by them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And it follows John James Obadon, who is historically probably one of the most well-known ornithologists and artists of birds in America. He catalogued them, which makes it sound a bit boring, which it isn't. And this is the sort of story of his life. He's a sort of slightly selfish, obsessive character who travelled across America and drew the birds and tried to catalogue every single one of them with nothing more than just a sort of companion and this sort of need to get it all done. He's got he sort of falls in and out a bit of insanity and obsessive compulsive and this sort of thing. And it is just absolutely incredible. It's just probably one of the best things Nobrow have done, and that's saying a lot because I really do love this stuff. It takes you back to the 1800s, so it's before the sort of the days of the internet and everyone can look something up, and you know, nobody needs to know anything anymore, do they? They can just like look at their phone and find out you know, a vague fact that the internet has made up or shot out of them. And this isn't the world of Twitter, and it isn't the world of sort of 24-hour news cycles either. And it's a guy who just is prepared, completely prepared, to spend his whole life going around America, living rough, you know, sleeping under a tree, you know, fighting off sort of redneck-type characters to draw the birds of America. And it is absolutely just so really detailed, the most detailed book I think I've seen in a while. If you hold it up to the light, you can see that the middle section... It's all white pages on the outside of the book, but the middle section is four black pages. And this, if you go straight into that in the book, it's when he's in a sort of fever. He has a fever dream, and he sort of dreams about his future and his past and being attacked and his children and his family, because he sort of disowns and sort of leaves his family behind and just travels America and does what he thinks is his life's work. Mm. Initially, he gets turned down. He gets turned down by... people who want to buy, you know, he's trying to sell his art to, and they say it's too emotive. Your drawing of the birds should be much more clinical, much more just purely scientific. But after a while, he travels to London. He does quite well in London, sells his comics there. But it's he's measured against the people who were sort of before him, and they drew these sort of very sort of clinical drawings. But his life isn't about that. His life is full of sort of passion, and he's very earnest about everything he does. Very good. As I say, it's only $15.99. It's out now. It's actually in the shops. You can get it. I saw it in Orbital yesterday. Very good. There you go. That's my choice.
Awesome. It does look quite beautiful in terms of like the artwork and stuff. Although I must say your sweeping generalisation that ornithology is boring, Tony.
Right.
You haven't made any friends with that, have you?
Those armies of bird watchers will be kicking off down the road later, won't they?
Go clubbing. In this day and age, there's an army of everyone ready to say something.
Yeah, probably.
Probably about us as well.
Yeah.
But no, that sounds amazing. And the thing is, I was joking with Tony that we've mentioned a few of Nobrow's books. It's because they're putting out consistent quality all the time.
Yeah.
It's fantastic stuff that Nobrow puts out.
Well, it's just a surefire way to get to people to get talking about you. You know what I mean? Do quality products and keep doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know we talk a lot about, you know, how do we get comics out to people outside of, you know, our little world of comics. But Nobrow seems to do it really successfully, you know.
Mm.
You'll find this stuff in as many bookshops as you will comic bookshops, you know. Because they produce these sort of beautiful packaged books.
Yeah.
Really nice, you know.
I think that's an interesting conversation that we need to have one day about pushing the product and getting the comics in front of more people.
Mm.
I know it's a kind of a bit of a microcosm, but I've sold my comics to people at work who have very little interest in comics, whether they actually read it or not, I don't know, but they're buying it at least.
Yeah.
I'd like to think they read it.
Yeah, I mean, well, every sale is a sale, isn't it, really? I mean, I don't think you can be too judgmental about people buying your books, really?
No.
If they're buying your work, it's all good, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I want it to be read, though. That's the reason I'm doing it, as opposed to make sales.
Yeah.
But I can see your point.
Yeah. Well. Obviously, I'm thinking that people always read your stuff, Dan.
Thank you, Ben.
Because it's very worthwhile. There you go. And speaking of worthwhile, what comic have you got this week, Dan?
Okay. Seamless, guys. Seamless. Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, this one... comic called Midnight Butterfly. It's kind of comic slash graphic novel. It's written by written and illustrated by Stephen Reynolds, and you can get it off Amazon for $6.79. And I'll read you a synopsis of what they got on the site, which is, did I say the name of it? It's called Midnight Butterfly.
Midnight Butterfly, yeah. Yes, you did.
I get this at an aneurysm there. So, what is The Midnight Butterfly? This graphic novel reveals for the first time a story that has remained hidden for over a century. In 1859, a small boy left a candle burning by an open window. And as the child lay dreaming of adventure and daring deeds, something in the dark was drawn to the flickering light. So, yeah, I didn't know anything about this book, but other than Stephen Reynolds is the main kind of host compere on the Empire of Geek podcast. And he talked about how he talked about his sales. He went to a comic convention, the name of which escapes me, but how it did really well. And the audience and crowd there seemed to be interested in it. So took a punt and ordered it from Amazon, and it had like a 2-day turnaround. I think it's on a it's like a print on demand service that Amazon do. So literally an order comes in.
I've heard about that before. Yeah,
they print it out and away it goes. And it's a good quality book. I mean, you know, I've seen some print on demand stuff which feels like it's literally just blasted out in a laser copier or something.
Yeah,
but not this one. So, but Midnight Butterfly is a quirky horror graphic novel set in Lincolnshire in 1859. It tells the story of a small boy called Hubert, and as the story starts, it's the morning of his birthday, and he's gifted by his loving parents a Sharps rifle along with a stern warning not to fire it within the house. With this warning ringing in his ears, he bounds upstairs to play King's Men versus the Natives, and after several hours of play, night's fallen. Through the young Hubert's window drifts a moth drawn to the flame of a candle burning in his room. Before Hubert even realises what he's doing, the gun goes up and he's blasted the creature into ribbons. And this is where the story gets dark. That's the spiel I typed. So I don't want to kind of spoil this book at all, but that's literally the first couple of pages. It's a really good comic. It could lazily be described as kind of a Victorian Reanimator meets Little Shop of Horrors, not without giving too much about the comic. Yeah. But it doesn't do it justice to kind of do a lazy comparison like that. There's a real healthy dose of dark wit with the comic. It's absolutely chock full of sight gags, and Stephen's artwork's really nice. He does like panels that are stamps, and that's the panel inside the stamp. And it's very creative and very imaginative the way he's told the story. There's a couple of things I saw in there and thought, wow, okay. Obviously, to get a pun, I didn't know what the art was going to be like. And it's really quirky. It really reminds me of a style, but I couldn't place which style that was. But it's really good. I don't think there's in the Amazon. You might be able to take a look and see what it looks like. I might tweet it to you or send a picture to you guys, see if you can kind of... I'm just trying to think of a way of describing it to listeners. It's got some really nice dark touches. There's one sequence where a character dies and there's two mourners discussing them after the funeral, and one says it's a freak accident, apparently tripped and his head fell off. I always thought he had a weak looking neck.
Amazing.
It's real kind of it's really nice. It's got some real dark tones, real dark humour.
Yeah.
Like when a vicar's in the pulpit giving a sermon, and when he cut to the over-the-shoulder look, his Bible's open, he's got a picture of a nudie woman there, and each panel's chock full of little throwaway humour bits like that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's really good. I recommend read.
I must say, I did wonder about this book. I wasn't aware it was available on Amazon, because I listened to the Empire Geek podcast, which is a great podcast, by the way. And they talked about I've forgotten the name of that con as well. Dan, was it Leicester? No, it wasn't Leicester, was it? It was somewhere like that, wasn't it? Or Lancashire.
They're up north, aren't they? They're from up. It's not Stoke-on-Trent, is it?
No,
is it that one?
I don't think it was that one. I think it was a sort of Lancashire con. But I'm going to think about it as soon as we stop recording.
That's a brilliant name, Stoke-on-Trent.
Yeah. I love a play on
working
words,
the pun in there.
Yeah. But when they were talking
at
about
the table,
this book,
they had a model of like the Midnight Butterfly, and that was drawing a lot of people over.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Okay.
That's fantastic to have like sort of convention sort of
a prop.
Props and things like that. You know, that's always good to draw people in. I think I haven't got any, which may explain.
You do. You got the red mask.
You're loads.
Id figure.
Well, yes, I haven't. Yeah, I've got a Funko Pop, and I've got a sort of a crochet. Is it crocheted? I can't remember the figure.
You've got
that,
a fake hand.
I've got, yes. Okay. All right. So I've got an interactive display. Yeah. Never thought I'd say that this week.
Booth babe.
Yeah. Well, that's only when you're there, Tony.
Yeah.
But no, Midnight Butterfly, just, it sounds great. Now, I definitely need to get my hands on this, actually. I might have to follow you up, Dan, and get this from Amazon. But they actually listened to the show, and they did follow up some of our points. One of our episodes where we talked about being at cons and some of the advice and learnings that us and our lovely listeners have had, they brought them up on one of their episodes because it was their first time at a convention, which was very interesting, I thought.
Great little bit that when they talked about you two.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they did kind of unleash a broadside on cosplayers on that show. They kind of didn't hold back.
Yes.
They essentially said the cosplayers.
Yeah, they did, yeah. They said that we got it right, but we got a lot of flack for it, I think. Well, you two got it right.
Yeah.
Us two.
Yeah. The two people on the podcast.
I don't think Tony got mentioned, Dan.
No.
Tony didn't get mentioned on the Empire Geek podcast.
No,
Tony.
That's why I hate them.
Everyone knows your name, Tony. Yeah. Like,
all this can be undone. Just mention the name on the next show.
Yeah.
Okay.
The next
they
Empire
Geek to us.
Yeah, they will. Yeah. They have been.
Will they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Someone has to. Yeah, so Midnight Butterfly. So a definite recommendation from you, then, Butcher.
Indeed. Yes.
Brilliant. Even though you said the Little Shop of Horrors thing, you know, you said that was a lazy comparison, but I thought, well, if it's anything like that, amazing. I got it.
Yeah.
But, yes, brilliant. My read for this week, I read a few new things. I had a little list of things I was going to pick out, but I had to go with a new issue on Comixology that I picked up this week from Boom Studios, and it is Skyborne number one from the mighty Frank Cho. Frank Cho is one of my favourite artists. Hopefully one day,
friend of the show.
Friend of the show, Frank Cho. God, that'd be good, wouldn't it, if we could actually say that.
Enemy of the show, Frank Cho.
yeah, true. Frank, what are you? Please tell us. He's not going to listen to this. But basically, Skyborne is Indiana Jones meets James Bond with fantasy elements thrown in. Cho describes it as one of the most cinematic stories he's ever envisioned. And basically, it's the legend of King Arthur is alive and well in modern day. Only one man, Skyborne, can stop the evil Merlin from destroying the world. Now, that's just simple sort of setup, you know, that'll get you into it and going. And this first issue, it doesn't really say too much about the story as such. And it's very cinematic, as Frank says. I've never seen him do anything so cinematic as this. But it's all action and all set up. And this just blew me away. I think it might be some of his finest artwork that he's done to date, I would say. Tony, you've also read this, haven't you?
Yeah, I liked it, yeah. It didn't absolutely blow me away.
Wow,
I think it would...
you got no taste.
I like the art, but it just strikes me as a... From the writing point of view, I'd say it fits in with something like a Valiant book, you know?
Oh,
it's a nice setup for a first issue. Yes. I'll probably read it as a trade. I probably won't buy the single issues from now on.
It starts I love this first issue. It's very important what happens in the next issue, I think, what happens in issue two. It's a 5-issue miniseries, this one, so it is going to be a nice trade. But it starts with a man falling out of the sky 29 years ago somewhere over China. And he just hits the ground and creates like a mini crater. But he's completely unharmed. And he seems quite annoyed that he actually survived the fall. And that's your big epic sort of like setup. But then it goes into, it's almost, I don't know, it's very reminiscent of those sort of like Bourne-like. I think it's going to be one of those stories that like Bourne, it's going to travel all over the world. And it's going to be like a sort of spy thriller, come fantastical elements and stuff. And you have a family, basically, that have... They're like immortals. There's Abraham Skyborne, who I think is the hero, Thomas Skyborne and Grace Skyborne. All three children were blessed with superhuman strength, impenetrable skin and immortality. And it says on the inside cover, this is their story. And they are the children of Lazarus, who, after his miraculous resurrection, fathered three children. So you've got your setup for your three immortal characters, and I know stuff is just going to kick off from here. And a lot of it, you get some simple sort of setup with one of the children trying to get hold of Excalibur from someone who doesn't want to give it to her, we could say that. And then it kicks off into a massive chase and fight scene that doesn't skimp on the red stuff. It's the first time I've seen Frank Cho sort of properly draw like people getting ripped in half. Maybe I've missed some of his work, but you know, that was really impressive. And I know Cho gets a lot of, I know in the past he's got a lot of criticism from people about, you know, because he draws beautiful people, and sometimes he gets over the top criticism over his the way he draws women, which I think is fairly unfounded, because we were saying it just before we came on the show, he draws men exactly the same. Do you know what I mean? It's a comic book world. There are attractive men and there are attractive women. But I think some of his work has invoked some people's ire. Would we say that?
I just can't see the problem if someone wants to draw cheesecake and some people want to buy it. What's the problem?
Yeah.
I was thinking this the other day. I was watching, I never watch the music channels, and I was flicking through the music channels. I thought, fucking hell. As a, you know, 38-year-old man, even I thought it was quite outrageous. And then you see people losing their shit over someone's, you can just see the corner of someone's pants. I need to get a grip. You know what I mean? Who cares?
Yeah.
Seriously.
It's not just the kind of, this kind of annoys me, I'm not going to get it. It's like, I've got to fucking let the entire world know that this doesn't sit well with me. So I'll fucking get over it.
Yeah. It's more about the people that are tweeting it than it is about the issue these days, unfortunately. That's where we've hit it on, you know, my humble opinion.
Yeah, and I agree. Now, Cho has been like the focus of some of these people going off on one. This Skyborn, ignore that whole sort of argument, because there's no cheesecake, there's no over the top sort of flashes of flesh. There's
a little bit of side boob on the cover.
On the cover, but then again, when have covers not gone over the top in order to get people's attention?
I'm not knocking it. I like side boob.
Yours or anyone else's? Anyway,
right, and I like front boob as well.
Which one?
But you're not mad on under boob?
not as much.
Yeah. Omni boob.
I'm putting it as number three in my choice.
Yeah. Reverse.
Put
boob?
It under the rest.
Oh
yeah.
Oh dear, I knew this conversation was going to go off kilter. But this actual issue is a brilliant example of action scenes done well. I know the way there's a moment where someone smashes through a door, and I absolutely love that panel. That's the sort of panel that whenever I try doing over the top sort of action in my comics, I try to get that kind of movement and that kind of pacing so you can actually feel it. It ends on a bit of a twist that I didn't see coming. After a gritty chase, I can't wait to see more of it. I mean, I'm definitely going to subscribe to the next one, and probably if that one's good, I can imagine that I'll be picking up the trade as well. So, Skyborn from Boom Studios. You can get it on Comixology, but as it's Boom, you'd be able to get it in your comic book shop anyway, won't you? Have you seen it about, Tony? Dan?
Yeah, I bought it today. Yeah.
Oh, so you actually got the physical issue.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand the internet, so I just buy comics. So it works for me.
Well, I buy comics, I just happen to buy them on the internet.
Yeah, that's confusing me. Oh, right. There's an advert in the back for it, Tarzan on the Planet of the Apes. That looks fucking great. I'm going to get that.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That's a really good concept.
That looks really good.
It's, and the tagline for it, beware the beast man, for he is the devil's pawn. Ugh.
Not wrong, isn't it?
Actually, the way I've said that sounds a bit weird.
And there's Jack versus Snake, an advert as well. Big Trouble in Little China meets Escape from New York, written by Greg Pak. How fucking good does that look?
Right. Now, I'm gonna say something that...
Oh, here we go.
This is my personal opinion. And that does look good. You know, the artwork looks amazing. I will say that. And the creators are great. I'm not always down... I don't really gel with crossovers. For instance, Tarzan on the Planet of the Apes... Look, that piece of art that's in the back of this book issue looks amazing, but it's not really for me.
Fair enough.
No, you don't like that idea?
No, it's just...
Have you ever read the Planet of the Apes Alien Nation series from the 90s?
No.
No.
That is really good. Oh, my God. Yeah, really good.
Really?
Yeah. I liked Alien Nation as well, didn't you?
Yeah, the film's brilliant. I remember that.
I quite liked the series as well,
yeah.
Yeah,
the series was all right, wasn't it? Yeah. But I've never really sort of gelled with the... what was it? like Judge Dredd, Batman, or things like that. I know a lot of people love them, and you know, it's big, you know, these characters have big followings.
I think it depends on which one it is. Sometimes, you know, I didn't go mad, although I like Legion of Superheroes and I like Star Trek. I didn't go mad for the crossover.
Yeah,
it just seemed a bit redundant, really.
For me, it has to kind of make sense. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It has to. That's why I mean, Aliens and Predator just gels well. It feels to me like that makes sense. But and Tarzan on the Planet of the Apes, I'm sure it'll come up with a crazy way of doing it, and it just seems to make sense. But some of those ones where you have Superman aliens, I was never going to touch Superman aliens. I was, you know, that's just me personally.
Wildcats or Stormwatch aliens, that was really good. That was well done. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
Essentially, the aliens just take them all apart.
Was that in canon as well? Was that actually in?
Yeah, that was canon.
Yeah,
loads of characters die, and that's the end of it. And Stormwatch, the station blows up, and that's canon.
Say so,
King's Watch. That's good.
Yes, King's Watch is great. But then again, for me, I know they're older characters, but they also for me it brought up Defenders of the Earth, which was I used to love when I was a kid. You know, Flash Gordon, the Phantom, Mandrake.
Yeah.
Put them together. It's just win, isn't it? All the time.
Yeah.
But anyway, we digress. Skyborn, get it. It's ace. We'd like to know what you think of it. Fraser, you have been so patient sitting there listening to us waffle on. What have you read recently?
Well, I was going to say, who was it last week who was talking about Scuddy?
Me.
Oh, you done? Yeah. Obviously, I checked it out as a result of you raving about it, and that's an unbelievable comic book.
Yeah,
absolutely terrific. I had a look at the Kickstarter, and I'm going, oh my goodness, he's absolutely smashed that.
Yeah.
Through the ceiling, and then read the comic and realised, well, I can see why he's done that. It's one of the most sumptuous looking things I've seen in a long time. I thought that was fabulous.
I mean, the artwork really grabs you.
Amazing, yeah.
I looked at it and I thought, I need this book. I need to pledge on the Kickstarter. The only thing that stopped me was the dreaded postage. You know,
oh, yeah.
Obviously, the guy's doing what he can, but it's expensive for him to send these books across the pond. So, the postage, it was more than the actual book. The postage, I think.
Yeah, well, it's quite a chunky hardware. Well, I suppose you can get a soft cover, but you would, there's no point doing that. Yeah, no, it's an amazing looking book. The real kind of animals are farming wood kind of vibe to it.
Yeah.
That kind of idea that anybody could go at any second, any character. Just that sort of pervading sense of doom. And it's just also beautifully illustrated.
Was it a sense of impending doom? Because Dan loves a bit of impending doom.
Well, there was doom. There was doom abounded. I thought it was fantastic. I read it all on the... Obviously, you know, in case you don't want to buy the Kickstarter or back the Kickstarter, you can read, I think it was about 60, 70 pages on his website, which is very nice of him to make that available. And it's just fabulous. I thought it was great. And I'm not surprised at all it's done so well.
I mean, I definitely feel like you need that one. I'd love to have it as a printed book over the...
And there's going to be outsize as well, which obviously, artwork like that, it's going to really benefit from that. So yeah, I think that's going to be a great package for folk when they buy it. I thought that was amazing. Mm. But that wasn't actually the book I was going to talk about. I was going to talk about another Kickstarter success that I got through the mail this week called Black Mamba.
Oh.
Huh.
This name rings a bell, but I don't know anything about it, so please enlighten me.
It's a four short noir story set in Mumbai in India by a writer called Ram V and various artists. It's about an inspector, sort of older police inspector called Dev, and this is an extremely world-weary guy, investigating various cases with his partner Barry, and it's just it's got all the sort of the kind of typical noir elements of it's all black and white, and it's they're all very dark tales, but it's got a sort of dark and a weary humanity to it as well. The character's really cool. It starts off basically the first short story is about the main character, this Dev character, about to commit suicide in his car. And he hears this animal yelping, and he goes out and he sees somebody has made a botched attempt to kill a dog. So he puts the dog down and then goes back to the car and thinks better of killing himself with a line suit, putting down one broken dog's enough for one night kind of thing. It just sort of continues in this really cool dark vein. There's a story called Rats in the Dark about a couple of guys who have been employed in the docks in Mumbai to kill rats round about the grain stores. Because they're like kind of infested with rats, and that's a really dark story with a really dark ending. It's just excellent. It's great. It's really well illustrated. The writing is just spot on, punchy. The characters are really nicely realised. It's a nice hardcover as well. It's just a really nicely packaged wee item. It's one of these great wee things you get through the post.
What was that? What was the wait time like between when you pledged on the Kickstarter to actually getting the book?
Oh, it was actually pretty quick because I think I came to it relatively late in the campaign. If I'm honest, I don't think it's even as much as a month since they got it through pretty quick. I know sometimes you can get you can end up with quite a long wait, but this, as I say, not only a great book, but looked like a well organised campaign ticks all the boxes and thumbs up from me.
You like your gritty, dark stories, as we all know from Sleeping Dogs.
Well, yeah. I'm a bit of a noir guy, but this is, as I say, it's really easy to do badly. It's easy to do, it's easy for somebody who's good at it to do it badly, on occasion. It's not an easy thing to pull off because it's such a well-worn way of telling a story. But this is, as I say, this is really nicely done. Obviously, what makes it a bit different from most noir is that it's set in India, it's set in Mumbai.
Yeah.
It's a different, comics that they give you an insight into, another culture, another way of life, maybe similar to ours but not quite the same. That all helps, that all helps sort of build your world and create a more interesting picture. But it's the introduction story with this Dev guy. You kind of, even though he's basically starting the story with a gun in his mouth, you kind of like him right away. It's a fun way to introduce someone for me. I don't know if that just appeals to my sort of twisted sensibility, but I just thought that was an interesting way to, just this guy sitting in his car going, do you know what? I've had enough of this. I just thought that was a really cool way to introduce the characters and the story and, basically go, here's the tone of what the rest of this book's going to be like.
When you choose that character like that, they're absolutely rock bottom. With a gun in their mouth, obviously. So
he's literally sitting in his car, ready to end it when we meet him. Yeah, more or less. It only gets darker from there.
Oh, God. Nice. So you got it from the Kickstarter. Do you know if it's available anywhere else, or are they going
to
have it?
Well, I don't, to be honest, but there is a website. If you go to blackmumbacomic.com. I'm sure that'll tell you. Awesome. Or you can hit Ram up at his website. He's at ram-v.com, I'm sure they'll point you in the right direction there.
Nice one.
Well, that sounds amazing. And speaking of amazing, yes, there's another segue for you. This is my segue marathon this week, isn't it, Dan?
Loving it.
I almost gave up on segues last week, and now I'm back with a vengeance. It's like a Sharknado of segways.
I think you're just doing it automatically.
I know. Kind of. It's just become part of my
speaking
very
of automatic.
Oh!
that's his next level stuff, guys.
Yes.
Inception punts.
That was. I can't outdo that, Dan. That was phenomenal. But speaking of automatic, it's time to switch the focus over to Fraser's book, which has a successful Kickstarter that deserves your attention. But for those of you who haven't heard about it, that book is Alex Automatic. So, Fraser, pitch it to us.
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that. Well, Alex Automatic is it's a 48-page full-colour comic about a guy called Alex Anderson who has been subjected to an experimental government program called the Prism Protocols, and the result of that is that he can have knowledge skills grafted into his brain for specific missions, so he's a kind of rewritable agent.
However,
the process has kind of left Alex really unstable and dangerous, and he's become trapped in this sort of fantasy, this delusion that he is in fact, a robot super spy hero from a 70s TV show called Alex Automatic, which exists entirely in his own head. So it becomes very volatile because of this, and basically gets shut down and is held in stasis in a secure government facility. However, when we meet him, two well-meaning journalists have found out about him and tried to break him out, thinking they're going to get a great story and do him a favour, but they soon come to realise they have no idea what they've unleashed.
Wow.
Pesky journalists.
It's always the journalists. It's always well-meaning people, isn't it?
Well-meaning journalists, you know, as if they exist.
Yeah, you can tell it's a story of fiction.
Oh, okay. But yeah, it's, slightly naive. What the idea, as you find in the story, that one of the journalists knew Alex in a, while Alex was in a sort of civilian cover identity, and she feels a kind of connection with him. So she's trying to help what she believes to be as a friend, but obviously she finds out latterly that was all just a cover.
So do you get flashbacks when Alex is seeing what he's doing as part of the television show that he imagined himself to be in?
Yeah, but there's quite a lot of sequences where Alex is seeing what's happening from the perspective of him being this Alex Automatic character who has, like, telescopic robot arms and legs and a gun in his wrist and various other wee gadgets and stuff like that. And that sort of switches back to reality, which is obviously, usually a bit grimmer than what he's imagined. Yeah. He's sort of day-glow 70s kind of world, you know?
So, I can imagine, yeah.
So what inspired this quite crazy concept?
When we finished up doing Sleeping Dogs, I was chatting to James Cochran, who's the artist on this, on Alex Automatic, and we're just talking about, can we think of an idea to work together? And he had this idea, just basically a germ of an idea about wanting to do something about a guy who was an automaton, a robot of some kind.
Yeah.
And he just had a couple of scenes, just a couple of ideas of things that he would like to draw. And so we went away and we thought about it, and we were chatting at the same, round about the same time about the sort of TV Century 21 shows like, Thunderbirds and Joe 90 and all the sort of ITC shows that we grew up with, like The Prisoner and The Avengers and The Persuaders and The Champions and stuff like that. And so it just kind of morphed into that. It's just, I quite liked the idea of doing something that was a kind of, that was a throwback to that kind of, sort of fun, almost sort of, sort of glamorous, exotic, sort of spy, super spy show. Just doing something like that straight, if you like, would, kind of derivative of it, a bit flat. So I thought
the story plays it all completely straight, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. Yeah, the story plays it entirely straight. It's I think there's a couple of people who I've shown people a few pages, and I think there's some people who think that. I mean, I suppose there is some dark comedy in it, but it's, you know, it's really quite a dark story. As you'd have got from my love of Black Mamba. I like my darkness. But I think there's some people who thought, oh, that's maybe going to be quite funny, but it's, yeah, there's maybe some dark humour in there. But yeah, it's a pretty dark, sad story ultimately.
Because the artwork is also sort of reminiscent of the old school, you know, old school like 70s comics, as well as stuff like Allred, and you know, it's definitely, it's not dwelling in shadows or anything like that, is it?
No, James is, and this is again one of the reasons why we went for this kind of story, because I think obviously James's style really lends itself to something like this.
Yeah.
Because he's got this really lovely old school British illustration style, like you know, the comics that I would have grown up reading, like Hotspur and stuff like that. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but he's also a big fan of a lot of, you know, sort of Band Destiny and European artists. But I think there's a lot of Kirby and Ditko in there as well. Old school classic style that I thought would really lend itself to this kind of story. From what he's knocked out thus far, and he's very nearly finished the book, it's certainly delivering on that. It looks amazing.
Because you got pretty much most of the book done before you even attempted the Kickstarter, didn't you?
Yeah, we were two-thirds done before we started, and we're basically aiming to be completely finished by the end of this month, yeah.
Nice.
I kind of like that, though, when a Kickstarter has done some of the work already as opposed to starting scratch.
Yeah.
'Cause it feels less like taking a punt when you've got a fair bit of it under your belt.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think in one way, it's a good idea to have it all done and finished, and that way you can get reviews and stuff, and you know, you can send review copies out to people and stuff, and get an opinion, and get, you know, maybe get a few pull quotes and stuff like that. But at the same time, you know, Kickstarter's kind of for, you know, people who are finishing their project or trying to find a way to finish their project. So that was, I thought we've got enough to show that we will deliver on this. So yeah,
I mean, someone said about Kickstarter essentially is moving into a kind of a place now, rather than where new businesses and new ideas are kickstarted off, it's become like a pre-ordering system for products. And yeah. I've kind of got no strong feelings one way or the other. I mean, as long as you kind of get what you're paying for.
Me neither. I think it's a good point. I mean, I think a lot of people do use it as a kind of pre-ordering service. And for me, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
A mate of mine, Ryan Lindsay, tends to do this with his comics. He does a comic called Dear Editor.
Well, you've talked about it many times. We're big fans of Ryan.
Great. Him and Sam have that book, you know, done, and then just sort of spring it on you. And they only do it digitally, and basically go, well, new comic's done, and then they batter on, and you know, it's within the, you know, hours of the 30-day funding round, you've got your comic book.
Yeah,
that's, you know, I think that's a really, you know.
So, I mean, because Kickstarter takes care of that side of it, doesn't it? So essentially, that's like a shop front where they do is get the money and upload the product, and they delivers it automatically.
Yeah, and really, there's, you know, I've got no problem with that, because that's organised really just to make sure that, you know, Sam gets a bit of money for all the hard work that he's done, which is
indeed,
you know,
yeah,
not a problem with me at all. But yeah, I mean, from our perspective, I mean, you know, we're complete Kickstarter newbies. We'd no idea really what to expect when we did this. So it felt okay to go and say, you know, this is an unfinished project, but it's, you know, we've done a fair chunk of it. Here's, you know, we showed people plenty of it on the page, and are showing it. I should not speak about it in the past tense, because we are still ongoing, but
yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's just a way for us to get the book done and get it printed and get it out to people. Mm. Because as you guys will know, I mean, I did Sleeping Dogs with my own money, and yeah, that was a lot. That cost a lot of money.
Yeah,
you know, just for an average Joe, just to pull that out of his pocket, it's a lot of cash. So it's, you know, it's really helpful in that sense if you can get people who are interested in the project to, you know, to front up the cash. Yeah,
because especially when I've done Vanguard and print, it really feels like I'm putting my eggs in the basket. Because like, if that doesn't sell, obviously you've got this stock here that people don't want to buy, and you spent a fair bit of money on it. So I can certainly understand the appeal of doing a kind of a Kickstarter thing where people have indicated they want it before it's even gone to press.
The only problem is I now have this crippling fear that I'll go to conventions with Alex Automatic and I've basically sold it to everybody who wants it already.
Yeah, that's the other side of it, isn't it? But there's always going to be fresh eyes on it.
Yeah,
so.
No matter what way you do this, there's always room for crippling fear of failure. You know, it's,
if you're creating any sort of like fiction or anything creatively, there's always the crippling self-doubt and fear.
And if
there isn't, there's something wrong with you, because that then you haven't got, you got to push past that, haven't you? Really, fear is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you just do it anyway. I mean, what are you going to do? Not do it? Not make
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
Yeah. You just lie awake at night for a bit. You know, it's fine.
Yeah.
So how did you find, because obviously this was the concept of another artist rather than your own concept, as it were. I know you essentially became 50-50 sort of collaborators, but how was that process, stepping into someone else's idea, rather than, was Sleeping Dogs the other way round? It was all yours, and then you went to an artist?
Yeah, it was. I'd written the script and was looking for an artist. I hadn't done any comics for a long time, and I saw lots of my mates do really great comics, and I thought, I can do this. And so I wrote a script, you know, again, completely naive, thinking, this will cost a few hundred quid to do. And then went looking for an artist, and it was actually through my mate Ian Laurie, who's a terrific artist.
Who's on the rise, definitely on the rise.
Yeah, he's an amazing artist. He's the artist on And Then Emily Was Gone,
with
John Lee's, a big sort of underground hit last year.
Yeah,
it's a Scottish set horror comic.
He's just appeared in Comic House. He had a short in Comic House.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's in demand. He's a great guy, and we've been mates for like 25 years. We've known each other for a long time, and honestly, we were coming back from the pub one night, and I was sort of bemoaning the fact that I couldn't find an artist for this comic, and he basically showed me. I think Lataro had friended him on Facebook, you know, a couple of nights before, and he basically showed me some of Lataro's stuff and said, what about this guy? And that was it, really. I just got in touch with Lataro, and everything sort of went from there. But, you know, he was great to collaborate with as well. But, yeah, that was definitely a sort of, you know, a sort of chicken, the egg came before the chicken, like. And the script was done before anything else. But with this, James and I, it's good, though, because James and I had a lot of time to sort of chat about what we wanted to do and sort of develop the concept.
Yeah, because Alex Automatic has been in the pipeline for quite some time, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think I finished the script in February or March.
Oh, right.
But we'd been talking about it before, and James had been doing like sort of concept drawings, you know, really from like December, January. So we've been working on it for a while. But yeah, that's that was really good. That was good fun to work with James that way, and just sort of, you know, trade ideas and trade, you know, and just go, like, what do we want to do? What kind of story do we want to tell?
Was there much backwards and forwards, or was it you know, you just felt you gelled, you hit the right sort of rhythm, you were on the same page, as it were?
Yeah, to be honest, I think as soon as James sort of hit me with that basic idea, I went off and rustled up the concept of Alex Automatic, and with very few tweaks, back and forth on, you know, just messaging each other. I'd started writing characters up and doing character essays and stuff like that, and he was off doing concept drawings. So yeah, we came to the idea quite quickly.
So oh, nice one. without any spoilers, this is a one shot, isn't it? Much like Sleeping Dogs.
Yes, it is a one shot.
It's a one shot, but is Alex?
I got 38 pages of story this time.
Oh, nice. Is there scope for more Alex in the future?
Yes, is going to be my answer to that. I don't know if it would be James's. because obviously, you know, I think we'd originally planned to make this a 32-page story, and I ended up writing 38 pages, and, you know, I had to sort of, you know, grovel a bit to James. I'm really sorry, I've written more pages. I know how basically it's easy for me to just go ha ha ha, and then you know, 5,000 elves arise from here, yeah, stuff like that. And it's, you know, the artist does the bulk of the heavy lifting in these things. The reason I'm saying that is, yes, I have other ideas for more Alex Automatic stories that I'm very keen to do. And I think James is as well, but I think James has ideas for a couple other things he'd like to do maybe before we go back to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I can understand he wanted kind of a bit of a break between projects just to kind of flex your muscles in another area, creativity.
Yeah, this is James's first sort of long form comic. He's done illustration before, and he's you know, as you can see from the pages, he's an accomplished artist. But he's never. This is the first time he's done a full comic book. Yeah. So I think he does now feel as if he wants to, you know, see where else he can take his skills. Yeah.
So how did the process of this one? Now you've talked about, like, you wrote the script first for Sleeping Dogs, and then it just. Artwork came afterwards, but was it a smoother process, Alex Automatic, because you both developed the story, or, you know, was Sleeping Dogs, which we want to talk about now, was it more a case of you wrote a script and then had to describe everything to someone who was hearing it for the first time? Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, with Sleeping Dogs, it was just a case of I sent the script out to Lotaro, as you may or may not be aware. Lotaro is from Buenos Aires, and so we've never actually met.
Brilliant artist, by the way. Absolutely,
fabulous guy. And he's getting, he seems to be picking up a lot of work, which is brilliant. It was one of the main aims of doing Sleeping Dogs was, you know, once I'd seen Lotaro's artwork, it was like, oh, I need to get this in front of people's faces and show people what this guy can do, because he's awesome. Mm. So the process was pretty easy, actually. And I sent the script over, and we'd chat online about the odd thing, but usually it would just be a case of every now and again he would send me a page, which was exactly what I'd asked for. I would basically open my email inbox and smile for a bit, and then send it over to David Cooper, the colour artist, and we would sort of chat about, oh man, look at this page. It was really as smooth as that. It was a very smooth process. I realise I've been very fortunate and with both the sort of recent artists that I've worked with, Lotaro and James, have both been fantastic. You know, really, you know, happy to have a chat, happy to chip in with their ideas. I mean, basically, when I write a script for an artist, it's kind of like, you know, I'm the writer and you know, you're the director, so if you know, I'm not going to pretend I'm an artist. I'm most certainly not. So if you want to break down a page differently, you know, as long as it kind of goes in the direction it needs to go in, if you change the layouts or whatever, then that's fine with me.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, generally, worked on a lot of scripts from a lot of writers, and everyone does it differently. I'm kind of go towards more of a rough panel layer, like say five panels, and this is what happened going to each panel, mm-hmm. and then up to the artist to kind of design how those panels look and what emphasis to put on what, rather than kind of sometimes it's really tight. Like they said, I want it this size, and I want it from this angle, and I want this prominent, and it's, that makes it quite difficult for me, at least.
Yeah, well, I write the script out fairly conventionally, fairly tight, about, you know, what I want, and then obviously give it to the artist with a caveat that, you know, if you can think of something that's better than this,
yeah,
which you no doubt will be able to because you're an artist and I'm not, then go for it. And, you know, I've never had a page back from either Lataro or James where I've thought, oh, that's not what I wanted.
Fair enough.
Quite the reverse. I don't know. I think the scripting is as much for me as anybody else, just to make sure the story's flowing in the way I need it to get it towards the end, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like I say, when I give it to the artist, it's for the, you know, do what you want here. Basically, tell the story, but do it any way you like. If you want to, you know, if you want to make it, you know, four panels instead of five or whatever you want to do, then
I think most artists like that. I mean, some kind of do it more sort of job work, don't they? They just want to be told what they've got to do and they'll put it down on the page. But I think the majority of artists like having that bit of freedom that, you know, if they can creatively make a page layout work better, you know, add a panel here or there. And I know certainly, you know, from my own perspective, you know, I like to think that if I added a panel, you know, just an inset shot of someone's face, you know, an expression, that the writer's going to be like, that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, James has done that a few times on Alex Automatic, where I've written, you know, with my, you know, sort of Luddite layout skills and I've maybe thumbed out or written out a page, and he's taken one of the panels and made it an insert panel.
Yeah,
and things like that, which is doubled up to a really good. It means we have quite a few really nice wee badge designs as well. good, you know, cool wee marketing thing.
Yeah,
So that you know, just wee things like that that me as a non artist wouldn't think to do. That you know. So James has done that a few times. And so, yeah, that's absolutely no problem because it's, you know, it's made the page look better. So that's, you know, all good with me.
Was there anything specifically that James said, I want to draw this particular action scene? Theoretically, I want to draw this skyscraper and someone jumping off it, you know, that kind of thing. Or was it pretty much, here's the story, chuck whatever you want, you know?
Well, yeah, there was a couple of things he wanted in, and one of them's in. And one of them isn't really in, but we might put it in another story. Basically, there was one page where he wanted the character at that point. We weren't, you know, these are the kind of two wee visual ideas that he had right at the very start of the process. He had a scene where somebody was being operated on. And you know, it wasn't a human being; it was an android that was being operated on, and the doctors were kind of nonchalantly talking while doing their jobs, and that scene's not in this. But there is another one where he wanted the character to be being rescued from the seabed by frogmen, and that is him.
Okay.
So when you say frogmen, is it like men in wetsuits and flippers?
It is men in wetsuits. There are some weird and wonderful creatures in this, obviously.
That was why I asked, because I just thought...
From the TV show, but no frogmen, no actual frogmen, actual guys in wetsuits.
I thought,
unless like that's not what James meant, and I cocked it up. He's not going to want me again.
He wanted it to be like that film Hell Comes to Frogtown. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I know of it.
Oh, it's a quality film.
That's a classic.
So moving on with Sleeping Dogs, I reviewed it a number of shows ago, but I thought it was absolutely fantastic. It's kind of that real bleak stuff really appeals, like you, it really appeals to me. I'll get a lot more out of a story like that, and a lot more relatable than it says a fair bit about us. But the sort of the happy-go-lucky kind
general
of comics.
Life outlook,
generally, like I mentioned, like you're quite cheerful and happy-go-lucky as it goes along. But I don't know, I kind of get more out of a darker story than I do a light and fluffy one. Not to say I can't appreciate one. But
is that because your life is light and fluffy and you just need a little bit of darkness just to balance it out? Yeah,
maybe, hear something like that.
I grew up watching Alan Bleasdale stuff and Barry Hines stuff, and you know, just sort of classic British drama where, you know, they dealt with a lot of sort of people who were from working class backgrounds.
Yeah.
And you don't see that an awful lot in comics, or certainly not in sort of, you know, genre comics.
No.
And I just wanted to do something. The idea basically was just to do a kind of, you know, what if you know, John Carpenter and Alan Bleasdale had got together and done an action movie, you know?
Yeah.
That was the kind of idea, because I think, you know, it's easy enough, obviously, to do a kind of action scenario and have that, you know, the sort of crime element and stuff like that. These are all sort of well-worn. But I wanted it to have a bit of heart as well. That was the aim, anyway, with that. And just to, I think I'd pitched it at some point as that, you know, it's, you know, what if Alan Bleasdale had made The Raid or something, you know?
I said like a bit lazy journalistic comparison with kind of Kick-Ass, who kind of like the man is dressed as a superhero, but he doesn't say, right, I'm going to come out and be, well, he sort of does, but without sort of going too far into the story, kind of he is in a superhero. It's like a real world story, but with the guy in the superhero costume.
Well, the superhero costume, I thought it was a good sort of, I thought it was a good wee communicating device for sort of fathers and sons, you know, heroes and worship. So the idea of him, and to try and make it as sort of, you know, as downbeat and as fag end as I could, you know, I had Mal basically working in a comic book store as a mascot.
Yeah.
And that's how he's got his costume. He's not a hero in by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
He's a guy who's sort of trying to be a decent guy after, you know, many, many years of not being a decent guy. So that was I thought that was, you know, just a sort of fun wee motif to chuck in there. Just another wee bit of set dressing for what was essentially a story about a guy smacking the crap out of another guy that he didn't like very much.
Yeah.
As soon as you say that, Dan Butcher's bought it. That's essentially.
Well,
I do want to buy a proper copy of it because I've only ever read it on PDF.
Yeah, for all my talking about Barry Hines and Alan Bleasdale, there's a lot of people getting, you know, punched and kicked in the face. Yeah.
Yeah. What are your influences?
Oof, well, there's loads. Comics wise, obviously the great guys, you know, your Alan Moores, your Frank Millers. But I mean, I started reading comics again, you know, as a sort of, you know, semi-adult, I suppose, in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
So I was reading a lot of stuff like, you know, the Hernandez brothers, a lot of the kind of, you know, Peter Bagg, and a lot of the kind of slice of life stuff that Fantagraphics and Drawn and Quarterly were doing at that time.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I've always really liked superhero comics, and I still like superhero comics, and I don't really... I think some people, you know, seem to feel that the comic books that they're into have to be distinct from you know, Kate books or whatever they want to call them. But I really like all comics. I think comics are the best medium. Period. You know, and
And there's definitely things that you can do in comics that you can't do in other media. I mean, I hate to bring it up, but the Killing Joke, the animated version of that, that for me is the biggest example of how you can never, you know, the source material is something that can't really be translated. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I haven't even watched it because I think Ian Laurie watched it and it was, you know, he was so disappointed, and you know, Ian's the ultimate Batman fan, and he was so just gutted by how terrible it was that I thought, I'm going to
watch it. We've got a copy of it in the house. I've not even fucking watched it. We've won it a competition.
Yeah, there's a lot of scathing reports about it. There's some great podcasts out there with good views on it. The iFanboy podcast about Killing Joke is quite interesting.
I think one of the problems with kind of doing something like that, my take on it, I've not even watched it, is that was very much of its time and very much kind of that time period. And when you're trying to recreate it, I think you're immediately going to fail because of when it came out and what it was, you can never recreate that.
True.
So you're up against it straight away.
I think you're right. I think, you know, I think Killing Joke was kind of its time. And now, you know, I know that obviously you see people talking about it online. A lot of people have obviously big problems with it for, you know, perfectly good reasons. It'll always be a classic to me, but then I get why it's problematic for other people. But it's interesting because if you're talking about Alan Moore stuff, Watchmen's kind of the same. When they made the movie of Watchmen, it was kind of interesting that the point of Watchmen, the sort of, you know, the race towards Armageddon, at the time that they made the movie, wasn't really an issue anymore.
No.
It's maybe getting more so again now, but so it's maybe just an issue that's dormant rather than gone forever. But at that time, it just seemed like, kind of, oh, this. And the fact that, you know, Armageddon, obviously in the 80s when... it was 85, 86 when that came out. It was, you know, very...
So the Russians squaring up against the Americans and...
Yeah, it was very relevant. But maybe not so much when they made the movie, and that kind of made the movie seem a bit flat. It's kind of interesting because Moore's done a lot of sort of... you know, obviously nobody's ever tried to do a version of his Swamp Thing or anything, which I think is more kind of timeless.
It's broader as well, isn't it?
For V, that's very much kind of, it was slightly reinterpreted, but the message and the themes of it were still relevant.
Maybe
V wasn't such a bigger comic as...
I suppose that kind of, you know, there's always going to be the man.
Yeah.
You know, so that story is always going to be relevant. I hate to admit it, but I've never actually watched that movie all the way through.
Okay,
because I love that story so much. You know, I mean, do you know what I mean? I don't really need an adaptation of it.
No, fair enough. I think it's quite a good film. I quite enjoy it.
Yeah,
well, there you go. I'm sure I'll see it at some point. I'll stick with my floppies. my old doggy floppies.
I think a lot of Alan Moore adaptions as well, they're great examples of, and The Killing Joke is a brilliant example of this, how dialogue on the page doesn't translate to dialogue on the screen. You read these books and you read them, and in your head the books feel so cinematic, you know, they feel like epic sort of lines, but when you actually see them on the screen, that just doesn't work. There is a difference between writing for the page and writing for the screen, and The Killing Joke's a massive example of that, because the classic lines that you read, you know, you see a sequential panel with like one line of someone saying something like really striking, and it'll just stick with you. But when it's on the screen, it's just lost. It's just amongst all this other stuff. Yeah. You know, it doesn't have the impact. You know,
I thought that was true of Watchmen as well, because you know, it was such a reverential adaptation in a lot of ways. There were a lot of Alan Moore's lines that were just lifted entirely.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, you've got all the very famous sort of Rorschach scenes, but there was a couple of others. There was one, I can't remember the bit where I think the comedian and Night Owl quelled a riot. And Night Owl's obviously all upset because he's having to kick in US citizens. And there's a couple of lines in that exchange that seem really, really cheesy. That seems really hackneyed.
It was the same with the brilliant line from Watchmen. Who is it? The guy that says at the end, "For me, it was just a Tuesday." You know the classic line when he was talking about some massive world-ending event. For everyone else, it would be the biggest thing in the world, but for me, it was just Thursday.
I can't remember who says that.
There was some. Loads of people that are listening to this now are just ripping me to shreds. I can't remember it now, and I'm not going to Google it because I can't be bothered.
Send the correct line to Vince.
Yes. What we kind of Moore did say again today in an article is yes, they say he's jacking it in again, comics.
For the last 100th time. Great news for me.
Yeah.
that frees up a space at the top.
But like you said, at the time, when kind of Moore did that stuff, like, and you had Ozymandias saying, "Did it, I've done it 35 minutes ago," and the Joker killing someone and doing all this kind of stuff, and it was like the first time it was presented as kind of, this is like actually happening, this is real, like bad guys are winning, etc. But now that's so commonplace that when you're doing an adaptation of it, it's like, well, this has been done 101 times already.
Yeah.
But when you look back and he was the first guy doing it, essentially, it had so much more impact.
Yeah, I mean, it was tremendous. So not disparage his later comics, some of which were superb, but that first flush, that first sort of the first few DC projects that he did were sensational, absolutely sensational. And I think probably have been as important for getting, you know, people to read comics and take them more seriously now, which is, I think, now something he probably heartily regrets. He definitely did that by making the stories, you know, just a lot smarter and really still having loads of cool violence and stuff like that. Yeah, it was he was the man. He was the man. Yeah. And, it's interesting because I think he is him and. You know, one of the things that he talks about, kind of regretting, which I can understand because I'm a big Batman fan, but I'm as much an Adam West Batman fan as I'm a Dark Knight Returns Batman fan, and I think it's, if you actually look at everything that happened since Frank Miller and Alan Moore worked on those characters, and how, you know, that basically informed how that character was written. From that point on, almost completely. There are very few, if you like, lighter Batman stories, unless you go to the sort of kids' lines and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Some of which are very good, but I think one of the things he kind of regrets is that these were stories, and then we were all meant to move on and try different stuff and try new ideas and stuff like that, and not just stick to this.
Yeah.
You know, pattern that I'd created. I kind of see where he's coming from on that. That said, he also kind of freely admits he doesn't really read comics anymore. So he'll have missed the many, many, many very good superhero comics there have been since then. I know that, you know, generally speaking, superhero comics are, you know, pretty average, but there's some gems in there as well, you know.
I mean, but he set a template for Batman and the character that was so strong.
Yeah, it was very difficult to break.
Yeah, how the hell would you break it?
It was really only Mike Barr that I can think of that didn't do Batman like that.
Yeah.
And he came quite soon, or round about the same time, soon afterwards, with Alan Davis. And he did a kind of lighter, more sleuthy Batman, which I liked a lot. It was still, you know, still quite a lot of tragedy, and
I can imagine you writing a really good Batman.
That would be the ultimate dream.
Remember where you heard it here first, folks.
Oh my goodness, yeah. No, that opportunity has not presented itself, Vince, as you may be
yet.
So DC said, right, we're going to have you in 10 o'clock Monday morning. We rented an office. What's your pitch for Batman?
Oh my God! You put me on the spot. I don't have one.
I have.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I think almost everybody does. The thing about that is, I really love these comics, but I don't really have pitches for like mainstream characters. I know most of my mates who are writers do, but I like telling my own stories.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
It sounds a bit. It sounds a bit kind of feeble and as a whole.
No, not at all.
There's certainly a lot of people who work for like the big two, and they all of a sudden they're doing a best-selling Image book that they're certainly making more money off, and they're probably more passionate about. But
it's one of these things. I know that if that opportunity presented itself, which it never will, but if it did, I could come up with something fun. But bottom line is, I'm more interested in creating stuff that doesn't already exist.
Good man.
I don't think I would ever actively, seek to. For example, if I did get like an offer like that would, put money in your pocket and all that kind of stuff.
But it comes off the back of doing work that you're passionate about. I mean, it's like Bendis says, do work that you love and it will show. Yeah. It will show.
Yeah.
And that's.
Yeah, I think it's difficult. I think, these kind of things, you look at a lot of comic creators and, people who are really talented and really good and, they're not making fabulous livings. And I think it's like any other kind of work. You can probably find yourself trapped in a kind of earning cycle, where you end up doing an awful lot of work that you don't feel passionate about, because somebody's nice enough and kind enough to offer you money to do it, and you're good at it. I think you mentioned Bendis, you can tell the difference between Bendis's big two stuff and the stuff that he's enjoying writing. His independent stuff. He's written a good amount of really good big two comics. That's Marvel mostly, isn't it?
But he's essentially the head Marvel guy, isn't he?
His run on Ultimate Spider-Man was fantastic. Yeah. I've been a big fan of that. But there's a lot of stuff that he's done for Marvel that I've not felt it. You know what I mean? And stuff like United States of Murder and Powers, you can tell you can tell he's really invested. But
when something like Jessica Jones Alias, he steps away from like the mainstream sort of thing, as it were. I mean, it's still within the Marvel universe.
Terrific. Yeah, that was a really. It's interesting. What's interesting about that is he obviously just hit on a terrific idea. And the two, it was really a couple of really excellent arcs on that.
Yeah.
And obviously for a character that nobody had really done anything special with. And
those are the sort of characters that I'd be more interested in. Like when people sort of say, oh, if you wanted to do this character or that character, this is just
classic. Yeah, so you put your mark on them.
Yeah, I would rather take someone that is a B-lister, C-lister, and try and make something of them. You can do a bit more with them.
Yeah, well, if we're going to talk about fantasy gigs, fantasy gigs, mine would be for DC, but it would be a Blue Beetle Booster Gold book.
Yeah, you are the man.
That's my ultimate.
I would help Blue and Gold.
It would be much lighter and not as dark as any of the stuff that we've been talking about up to now.
That's very much like if I was to pick two DC characters, it would probably be them, and I'd take them on a sort of like, I don't know, a buddy comedy, sort of road trip comedy through time. Do you know what I mean? Do something like that.
Goofing around.
That's exactly how I would do it as well. Yeah. Because I was a big fan of the Justice League, the sort of
Justice League, is it international?
The Kevin McGuire, Keith Giffen sort of stuff.
The Bwahaha sort of Justice League.
It was a lot of fun, I really liked it. My favourite part of it really was their relationship, and
Yeah.
And, you know, that sort of bromance.
That series contains one of my favourite sets of panels ever, and that's the one punch of Batman punching out Guy Gardner. Anyone who hasn't seen those panels, I think that's some of my favourite panels ever in comics. It's hilarious. Now, I did look it up, the quote from Watchmen. Right, I said I wasn't going to, but I was expecting the wave of hate and people saying, "You're an idiot, Vince. You don't know what you're talking about." Because you're absolutely right, people. I don't know what I'm talking about. I looked it up, and this is the quote he said, and it's completely different to what I said. But this is what I was thinking of, right? "I'm not a Republic serial villain. Do you seriously think I'd explain my masterstroke if there remained the slightest chance of you affecting its outcome? I did it 35 minutes ago. And that scene when, like, you know, he had already done something bad. When you read that on a page, it's amazing, but it was kind of lost on the film. That's what I was trying to get at. Yeah. And I completely messed it up.
That quote is definitely from something.
I know
where it's from.
I've mixed up my quotes, but
yeah.
Please leave me alone, people. Don't pick on me. But anyway,
if you can think, if you know that quote, write in and tell us.
Fantasy booking, though, I love playing games like this. So I think that's quite interesting that you picked those two for your DC, you know, if you write them. What other characters, I mean, for instance, if we were, say, Marvel, who would you pick from Marvel? I'm guessing you're more of a DC guy than a Marvel guy.
Yeah, probably. But I mean, I'm really both. I think... probably Daredevil.
Yeah.
Maybe Doctor Strange.
I wouldn't know where to start with that. I mean, I must say, I don't know much about Doctor Strange. I can't wait for the movie, but...
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. But yeah, I mean, Doctor Strange, there's a lot there. I don't think anybody's... without wanting to be... I mean, again, just speaking as a fan, nobody's really... You know, instead of kid knowing that I'm some sort of writer, I don't think anybody's really done a really great Doctor Strange for a long time. I don't think so either. Lots of people have done really good work on Daredevil, so I'd probably shy away from that, you know.
I've heard good things about Jason Aaron's Doctor Strange initially.
Well, there you go. I'm a big fan of Jason Aaron. Who hasn't? I mean, Southern Bastard. And stuff like that, just fabulous. And he's very good at the stuff he's done for Marvel. There's a lot.
I would say, if I was to describe him, he's a very quietly spoken and humble superpower. He doesn't realise. It's almost like he doesn't realise how good he is. Because I'm always, I'm waiting for the moment where he's going to drop the ball, and he hasn't seemed to at the moment.
He's done a lot of great stuff at Marvel. Yeah. He really has. But I don't think, looking back, Doctor Strange will be seen as his, maybe as his kind of.
I think his Thor run will be the one that everyone talks about. I think.
I mean, that first Thor arc was fantastic. Yeah,
God Bomb, God Butcher, and something else. Yeah. I forgot what it was. That's just epic. If you like good comics that don't have to be tied into anything else. That is like a good 12, 18 issues of gold, that is.
And I'm
not a huge Thor fan. I'm really not a huge Thor fan, and I loved that.
I'm quite a big Thor fan. I like Thor. I was a big fan of the Walt Simonson's run when I was a teenager. That was really good. And but again, he's a character that gets done right occasionally.
Yeah.
Aaron's run was fab. Yeah, it was really good.
There's quite a lot of, I feel like, characters, really great characters, great concepts, but only once in a while do they get a chance to shine when a writer really understands them and kind of brings out the elements which work.
And if a writer is getting that character at the right time in their career, when they've maybe come from an indie success or from a smaller book, and they're looking to show, they can mix it with the Bendises, with the big guys. I think Rick Remender did that with Captain America as well.
Yep.
The first 12 or so issues of that were fabulous. And then obviously he's moved on to do amazing stuff like Deadly Class and Black Science. So yeah, the Marvel was Marvel Now, wasn't it? Marvel reboot did give us a couple of wee magical books. Yeah.
Yeah, I need to read Fear Agent. That's on my list of things that I really need to read.
It's very good.
Yeah. See, this is what happens on this show, folks. We just talk about everything. If you wonder at any point, where has Tony Esmond gone? It's because he had to leave us, unfortunately, for a work call. So, so you will be missed, Tony.
Yeah, much love, Tony.
Yeah, much love, as always. We
hope you enjoy listening to this.
Yeah, yeah. But as you can tell, you know, as soon as you talk about comics with anyone that loves comics, you know, you're not going to stop the conversation, are you? So, and we've talked about we were talking about Alex Automatic and Sleeping Dogs, and we ended up on Rick Remender and Black Science. That's how
awesome a promotion I am. I get a chance to talk about my own books and signal boost my Kickstarter and end up talking about guys that are already hugely successful.
You have been, I mean, congrats to your Kickstarter, which has made its goal. But there is still time to go on it, isn't there?
There certainly is, yes, aye. We're slap bang in the middle of what I like to call the lull.
Yeah.
Where I think basically everybody who I know on Twitter and Facebook has been saturated with my nonsense about the Kickstarter and now I'm just annoying people. So you know, hopefully we can get the word out to a few more people and get them to check out the Kickstarter and see if you know, obviously if it's something that they like what they see on the page, then we'd really appreciate anybody else's backing. But yeah, we're absolutely delighted to have made Target already. That's we've no idea what to expect.
In a time where a lot of Kickstarters, you know, it takes a little longer to get some traction, I think, for some Kickstarters these days. I know September the 1st seemed to be Small Press Kickstarter Day.
Yeah,
a lot of them came out at the same time. But on your page, you know, you've got previews of the artwork. People know what they're signing up for, and you know, it's easy enough to see what the concept is, and the quality speaks for itself. So you definitely need to check it out, people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh well, thanks very much. Yeah, I hope. Yeah, I hope people have a wee look and like what they see. Yeah.
Plus, it's a one shot as well. That's what one of the things I like about it. Even though there may potentially be more in the future, you're getting a whole story. You're getting the bang for the buck.
Yeah, different episodes. I think the next story, obviously, we leave some aspects of the story hanging so that there's room for more stories. But yeah, it would be like the episodic TV you would get more of in the 70s, and nowadays it's more like kind of serials. You've got to watch one after the other to get the whole story. But yeah, I like that. I like one shots. I think it's one of the reasons I've done it is I did it with Sleeping Dogs because again I was like, well, nobody knows who I am, so at conventions it's going to be easier to convince somebody to buy a one-shot and to, you know, buy this and then come and maybe find me in a year at another convention for part two. It's just a nice simple transaction. There you go, there's a whole story, you take it away and enjoy it kind of thing. So yeah.
Have you done many conventions?
I've done a few. Not that many, really. I'd love to do more, but it's just, you know, being able to afford to travel around the country.
Yeah, it's travel, it's hotels and
I did Thought Bubble last year. That's where we launched Sleeping Dogs with I was very kindly accommodated by my friend John Lees, who wrote And Then Emily Was Gone, and he's now he's doing an IDW Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles book, so he's starting to go up in the world. We're sharing a table again this year, but I'm sure, obviously, now that he's getting professional gigs, there'll be a partition. Yeah, possibly bouncers. But he was really kind, and he let me come on to and share his table at Thought Bubble last year, because, again, you know, I didn't really know what I was doing, and that was great. That was really, really good. I always go to Thought Bubble. I've been as a punter loads, and I absolutely love it, the vibe, and just, you know, seeing what everybody's doing in the small press, it's just so inspiring. And yeah, Thought Bubble is one of the reasons why, you know, I've started doing comics again, just simply seeing what people in the small press are getting up to, and the kind of, you know, the range and the scope of comics that are out there. And it just makes you feel as if, well, you know, there's really room for everybody's voice. More than most other conventions, really, because it, you know, there seems to be a kind of small press focus.
With
Thought Bubble, even though they also do get the big, you know, they get some of the big name guys in, which I think is great. So you're really getting a twofer there.
There's going to be a lot of new names this year at Thought Bubble as well. So it's, you know, I'm not going to be there this year, so the party won't be quite the same.
That is a shame.
That is a shame.
You're right.
That wasn't meant to sound sarcastic.
No, but Thought Bubble does, and I know exactly what you mean. As soon as your eyes are open to all this creativity that's going on, it just inspires you to do more and more.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, it really does. What else did I do? I was at Edinburgh. There's a kind of burgeoning Comic Con in Edinburgh. That was in April, and that was really well organised and really well attended.
Was that an MCM, or was that like a different?
No, it was Hero Conventions, I think, who did that. So just this, I think that's the only thing they do. We had some great guests. They had Marco Rudy, they had Nick Pitana, they had Chris Burnham. They had some terrific guests there.
Nice.
And it was a really nice, wee, well-organised convention, all in, you know, a sort of nice Edinburgh Convention Hall, quite close to the station. So, yeah, just ticked all the boxes, done really well. So I did that, I did Glasgow Comic Con this year as well. I was, again, very kindly invited to share a table with the guys from Medius Comics. I sort of squatted with them.
That must have been an experience.
Yeah. And that was a lot of fun. Yeah. I do as many as I can. But I would love to be. When I listen to you guys doing the podcast, I hear about all the places that you've been in, and all the cons you've been to, and I'd love to be able to do that every weekend. It'd be awesome, but.
Yeah, there's not enough time and money in the world, is there, really?
Yeah, I know. Well, this is the thing. There just seems to be so many conventions.
There's a lot.
Comics events. Some more about comics than others, but that's all fine. But
sometimes, in a crazy kind of way, it suffers because there's too much. Does that make sense? You know, because there's more of it. And there's certainly more comics. There's more small press comics. So, you know, anyone out there who's creating comics, be realistic when you go to these shows. They're amazing. They're wonderful. I love going to conventions, no matter what convention it is. You know, I always have a good time. But you also have to be realistic that there's there is competition out there. Do you know what I mean? Everyone's friendly. But
yeah, and really, really good quality competition as well. Yeah, that's a good thing, you know, because if it's, you have to try and... You have to try and match that. You have to do your best to try and have a book that stands out from everybody else's and is interesting and competes with these other, loads and loads of other really talented people.
You've certainly done that with Sleeping Dogs, and you've definitely done it with Alex Automatic, even though, you know, the Kickstarter is still available.
The Kickstarter is still
available. So if you just go on... If you just go on Kickstarter, is it just search for Alex Automatic? There'll be links in the show notes, of course, and I know some people use them, and thank you for that.
You can, yeah. You just go to kickstarter.com/AlexAutomatic.
Amazing. And you're going to Thought Bubble. Are there any other shows you've got coming up?
Not that I've actually booked. I'm planning to go to Edinburgh next year. That'll be next April.
That's April, is it?
Next April, I think, by which time... I hope to have the next thing that I'm doing out, which is with Ian Laurie.
Oh.
which is called The Forest and Trees.
Can you say much about that at the moment?
Sounds cool.
All I can really tell you is that it is a conventional crime thriller done as if it's The Naked Lunch.
Wow.
Right, that just blows conventional out the water.
So. Yeah, so basically what Ian is just full of these tremendous ideas, and he came to me with this idea. Says, basically, I want you to write a straight up crime thriller script, 20 pages, just a, you know, done in one. You know, as I'm now becoming the done in one guy. and then basically I'm just going to draw whatever I want.
Amazing.
Going, right, that sounds terrific. So yeah, it's basically it's a story about a guy who wakes up in his bedsit. The only things that he knows is that his daughter is gone and that he has been drugged. And the story goes from there.
Well, that sounds like a decent premise, and God knows, with Ian behind the artwork, who knows where that will go.
Yeah, well, we hope, as I say, Ian's wanting to take his time with it, so it might not be ready for then, but, hopefully.
Either way, it sounds like it's going to be something special when it comes out.
Yeah, we'll see how long that one takes us, but that's hopefully what's next in the pipeline, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, you'll have to keep us posted on that. We will definitely give that a shout when that comes out. Thank you very much for talking about Alex Automatic and everything else with us.
I can't wait to read it.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. That's what I'm. We're really excited about getting it to you and getting it out there. You guys know yourself. There's nothing like the feeling of opening that box and pulling out the print copy of your book and then going, and then, you know, about an hour later, you start thinking about, shit, how do I sell all these? but you know, in that moment, that's a nice feel.
Yeah.
So we can't wait to get it done.
Yeah. Well, it won't be long now, so be sure to check it out, people.
Yeah.
We're not going to have an event section this week. Because none of us got, but you have to, wherever Fraser's going to be, you have to go. So all you people who are heading the Thought Bubble this year, check out his table, because you have two awesome books there for you to pick up.
In the Marquee with John Lees.
Oh, in the Marquee. Oh, the Biz Marquee. Lovely.
Marquee, yeah.
I'm trying to scratch my head for upcoming events. You got Demon Con coming up at the end of October, or in October.
Yeah.
I think.
I tell you what, it's always an event with us. This has been an event, hasn't it? Come on, be honest.
We don't I've need got one if you don't mind.
Go for it.
Fraser's here with the event section. What have we got coming up, Fraser?
And in the event section this week, your friend and mine, Gareth Hopkins.
Yes.
I noticed this week is going to be at the Lakes Festival, Lakes International Comics Festival, October the 15th and 16th.
Ah, brilliant.
And that is in Kendal.
Yeah, where they turn the whole town into sort of a comic
festival. Yeah, a comic convention. That's one of these, we've just finished talking about one of the conventions I'd love to be able to go to sometime if I could afford the time.
Yeah.
We all know, I mean, you guys know Gareth. He's behind the tremendous abstract comic, The Intercorso. He's just done his Intercorso 683, which is just an absolutely fantastic, unique way of just reimagining and reprocessing comics. I think it's a really interesting idea, and he's just so talented. So yeah, go along and see Gareth.
That's on sale in Orbital, I believe, Gosh.
Yeah,
in London and various other stores.
I mean, and we said it when he was on the show, but I think it's getting rarer that you can honestly say it's a book like nothing you've ever seen before. And Gareth's putting out that kind of work that you haven't seen anywhere else before. So. Mm. And he's really nice, and that goes a long way with me.
Yeah, he's a lovely guy.
He was our handler, wasn't he, at London Super Comic Con?
yes, he kept us in the containment block and fed us raw meat. Thank you, Gareth, for that. Shout out to Gareth. But what about shout outs? What other shout outs have we got, Dan?
None.
I thought you had a shout out.
No, I've got a recommendation shout out / shout out.
Oh, right, we'll leave that. Fraser, have you got any shout-outs? You seem to be the only one prepared this week.
Yeah, well, I do have a couple of shout-outs. First of all, I should say, I think I've probably neglected to mention the other two guys who are involved in Alex Automatic, who, without whom, you know, and that's David B. Cooper, who's the colour artist, who, if you've seen the pages, what a tremendous job he's doing.
Oh, God, yeah.
And Colin Bell, who, letterer extraordinaire, who's designing the logos and designing the look of the book, and he helps me package up the electronic version of the book and stuff like that. So again, without him, yeah, I would be completely lost.
Not enough can be said about colourists and letterists, I think.
No, absolutely, yes. Aye. So, you know, I don't want to be one of these guys who forgets people that are making his comic. You know, are... I very much integral to the actual thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would be remiss of me if I did that. But there was also I'm noticing this week again, going back to my old friend Ian Laurie. I noticed on Twitter this week he mentioned that he has found a stock of And Then Emily Was Gone trades, which he is allowing the public to purchase. I don't know if they should or not. If they're of a sensitive disposition,
I need to get that book. I've heard a lot of good things.
As you know, it's a tremendous and very well received Scottish set horror comic with really just fabulously grotesque art from Ian, and a terrific, extremely dark script from John Lees. If you want to get a copy of that, I would imagine you would be able to get one by hitting Ian up on Twitter. He's at Ian Laurie on Twitter, IAINLAURIE.
I think I'm going to have to do that very thing, because
see what all the fuss is about, because it's a terrific book, it really is.
Amazing. And speaking of terrific books, we've got all things to check out. It's time for the recommendation section.
Oh, yeah. Indeed, yeah.
Dan, you're first this week.
Should I go first? Yeah.
Go.
Shout out to the Tony. One love there. Keep his joke alive.
One love, Tony. Yeah. Word up.
Well, my shout out for this week is Periwinkle, the comic.
Oh, yes.
Comics Fighting Cancer.
Yeah.
It's a Kickstarter currently running by Susie Gander. I've known and worked with Susie for many years. She's done stuff for Raynard City and a whole slew of other online comics. And she's a real trooper, kind of battling away. She's running the Kickstarter for her comic book series called Periwinkle, which is a semi-bio-autographical comic set around Susie was diagnosed with cancer a couple of years ago. And it's all cleared up and gone in full remission. But essentially, she's writing this comic about her and her, what she went through in an effort to generate awareness and raise money for cancer charities and cancer trusts. So after like the costs are done, every bit of the money from there on goes on to help other people out. And when she's getting the books done, there's going to be a certain percentage that are going to go to these places. So they're going to have it in stock. So people who are there with undergoing treatment can read and see how Susie did. So it's a very worthwhile cause, and obviously with comics being involved, that makes it even greater. So I'd recommend pledging and getting yourself a copy and seeing what the comic's about.
Very much so, yeah. It was very cool. Periwinkle is actually a character that, when we did the Awesome Games a couple of months ago, our Crazy Hunger Games with small press characters, Periwinkle was actually part of it.
Oh, right, yeah, of course she was.
Yeah.
I can't remember how she got on. I don't think she did.
Anyone that was part of that got taken out in a brutal manner. So it was horrific, but a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So that's well worth checking out. Where can you? Did you say you could check that out?
It's Kickstarter, obviously. And if you just look, Periwinkle Comics Fighting Cancer, and it'll pop up. We'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing stuff. And for a brilliant cause. Amazing stuff.
I don't think there's many of us who could say we've not known someone affected by cancer in our lifetimes.
As for my recommendation for this week, I'm not going to choose a book or a comic. Tony gave me stick earlier for going to the cinema and actually tweeting about it. but I felt I had to, because I walked. I tweeted something like, "Rare is the time when you walk out of a cinema and you've just totally been blown away and in awe of what you've seen." And the film I saw today was Kubo and the Two Strings. Now, this is an animated film.
See, I've seen
film.
Trailers for this, but I don't know anything about it.
Now, I've seen a couple of trailers. I thought it looked beautiful and it looked amazing. But after the trailers, I watched nothing else. Do you know what I mean? I purely wanted to go in sort of blind, which you kind of have to, really. The basic setup is a young boy named Kubo must locate a magical suit of armor worn by his late father in order to defeat a vengeful spirit from the past. That's your simple setup. But this film is something else. I must say, it's created by, Leica. Laika. They're the guys that are responsible for the animations. Coraline, The Box Trolls, Paranorman. Yep. You know, it's stop motion animation. And with that in mind, the visuals on display in this film are just a wonder to behold. I actually walked out and I thought, in terms of like storytelling and the emotion that I got coming out of that film, it's kind of flawless. It does exactly, you know. I mean, it's an animated film for all ages. But it deals with death and loss, and you know, there's giant monsters. There's crazy sort of magic going on. If you watch anyone who's seen the trailer for it will know how special it is that this kid can play magic. He plays like a sort of two string or three string guitar, and makes paper. So it does magic with paper. It becomes origami animals and stuff that come to life and can do stuff like that. And it's just wonderful. It's definitely going to be one of my favourite films of the year, if not probably one of the best things I've seen in a long time. I got the feels as well. I properly got the feels.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's really, really good. It's another sort of... it was interesting when we sat in the cinema because there was all these adverts for like all these horribly naff sort of kids' cameras and like, you know, that was the only point where I thought, oh no, this is like a family film. Do you know what I mean? I'm so used to going to like, you know, you go to your Avengers films and things like that where you get all the TV adverts where they're sleek, stylish cars or, you know, they're phones or they're something stylish. And I was sat there and they were selling... They were selling like this cheap bubble gum or something like that. There's all these crazy, colourful TV adverts. That was when I thought, "Oh my god, I'm going to see a kids film." But it's a kids film in the best way a kids book is. You know, it doesn't talk down to your audience. It's not going for the cheap laugh. It deals with serious stuff. There's not big musical numbers, and it's just amazing. I just absolutely love it. So, and I don't know how much, like, how well it's going to do because it's not like. I'm sure it's going to do really well, but it's not like one of those big, colourful Pixar or DreamWorks pictures. Do you know what I mean? And I know the guys that made this film. They've done some films that have done really well, but they kind of go under the radar a little bit. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
But this one deserves to be a smash and just win awards. I absolutely loved it. It might be my favourite film of the year. So, Kubo and the Two Strings. If you like creative storytelling, this is the film to watch. It's amazing. So there you go.
I did go to the flicks myself today. Don't Breathe.
Oh yes, and that's a very different film. That's not all ages.
No, definitely not all ages.
Yeah,
there's a couple of films I've seen recently where people get locked in the house of a psycho, or the other way around.
Was that just your own webcam, Dan?
I get locked in my house, my schizophrenic personality, and hunt myself down. What's that one where the lady's trapped in the house? Well, she's got a house, but she's completely deaf, and there's an intruder.
Oh, Hush. Is it? That's a good film. Did you like that?
That was good. There was another one we saw a couple of weeks after that, very similar, where there's a lady who's kind of an agoraphobic and she's at home and people break into her house and they realise they've made a really massive mistake. And I can't recall the title of it, but it's really, really good. I'd say it's better than Hush.
There's really?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. There's some really good home invasion films out. but I think they have to stop making them now. Do you know what I mean? We've had probably the best kind of films, and now they just kind of need to leave it, don't they?
Trouble with this one, as in they're the bad guys, you know what I mean, the people you're with. And it's very hard to get past the point of, like, these are people breaking into someone else's home. So no matter how much the filmmaker tries to get you on their side, it's still at the core, it's like, well, they're in the wrong.
Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, so, apart from that.
So you're saying it's good, but there's no nice people in it.
It's good, but, like, you feel sympathy for people, but you're still like, well, come on. You're like,
you deserve this. Doing, is that what you're
saying? Not saying you deserve this, but if you're breaking into someone's house for money and then it suddenly kind of goes wrong for you, I can't feel too much sympathy.
Yeah.
A limited amount of sympathy.
So what we've learned is Dan likes to stalk people in his house and he has no sympathy. He has no sympathy. Oh, dear. Oh, they're calling Butch. He's not just called Butcher by name. That's what I've got to say.
Breaking to my house. The only thing you're taking away is pain and misery if you leave.
Pain and misery are the name of his Rottweilers that he'll set on you. Oh, dear. Fraser, please, lighten the mood. What would you like to recommend?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to lighten the mood, really, because my recommendation is the I've got a couple actually, but I'll start off with the Institute of Marine Research. Do you know of this at all?
No.
This is a web comic by a mate of mine called Stephen Goodall, and it's an absolutely fascinating comic. It's quite a long running, quite a long story, and When I first came to it, I just read the first couple of pages, and then that was me there for the next hour or so, just reading through this really fascinating story. Again, it's a story set on an island in the north of Scotland, and it's about the lives of the people who live on this island, who all work for this mysterious organisation called the Institute of Marine Research, and there's this foreboding sort of power station-y kind of warehouse-y kind of institute building in the background of this island, you know, just sort of humming away with mystery the entire time. And it's just that kind of very 70s, 80s drama, British drama, kind of darkly mundane horror. There are people who are kind of slowly, there are stories involving people who work at the Institute who have slowly been driven mad by their work there, and you don't really find out why or how it happened. There are stories pertaining to the kids from the village who are all, like kind of curious, little scamps trying to get into the Institute and find their way inside and see what the big secret is. There are weird domestic arguments between people who work in this place, and there's context that you're not fully allowed into at first, and it just builds and builds and builds and builds. Really, really, it's a real slow burn.
I've just checked out the first few pages actually online, and it's lovely black and white artwork.
Yeah,
there's a real sort of atmospheric sense of foreboding.
Well, there you go. It's got that trademark atmospheric sense of foreboding. Yeah, it really does so, but it's just like it pervades throughout the whole thing. And Stephen's done a bunch of wee sort of side stories and little background stories and stuff like that. And his current project, which is called The Listening Post, is a kind of follow-on from that. And it's just this really creepy, dark, very, as I say, very classic British drama kind of story in a comic book, in a long form web comic, which I just found a really fun and interesting thing. I absolutely loved it. I think it's a terrific comic. So you can check that out online. Just if you go into Google and just type Institute of Marine Research. Yeah. You'll find it.
SDFGoodall.com is where you can find it. He's also got a section in the downloads where you can actually download sort of collected editions of the PDF. Which is a brilliant idea, I think. You know, rather than like going page by page, you can just download a collected edition, which is amazing.
And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier about how you can really just do anything in a comic. This is a story that would be extremely difficult to tell in any other kind of form, I think. Maybe a novel, but I think it's just a terrific example of something very personal that comics can do. Obviously Stephen's got a very singular idea about what he wants to do with this story. I think it's just fantastic. So check that out.
Brilliant. Yeah.
I've got a couple of others. I've got. I don't know if you guys know of Claire Connolly.
No.
She's a I think an American comic book artist. You can go to ClaireConnollyComics.com and you'll find an absolute treasure trove of really amazing comics. Claire's got this kind of, it's kind of like a sort of kind of chiaroscuro sort of style, kind of like Jeff Lemire, but a bit, she tends to have, you know, sort of thicker lines, and I think she's an animator as well as an illustrator. But she's got this really amazing comic book style, and she tells these, our stories tend to be stories about single male figures coming up against some sort of weird series of obstacles, she's got tons of short stories and longer form stuff on her website, and I just think our storytelling, the way our stories flow, the artwork, and it's all very minimalist, it's very smart, and really engrossing. I think she's a huge talent, and I think she's got a following, but I'm really surprised she's not much bigger than she actually is at the minute, because I think she's a massive talent. So ClaireConnollyComics.com.
Nice.
Batter onto that and
nice one.
Feast your eyes on some quality comics.
Nice. That's just, there's so much for people to check out this week. I've suddenly, and shame on me for neglecting this in the shout outs, there was a Kickstarter I wanted to shout out. I've been meaning to do it for the past couple of weeks. There will only be a couple of days left on this when this episode goes out, but I highly recommend you check out Anything About Nothing, the book by Kelly Angel. Search it on Kickstarter. I've pledged to it. It's going to be a 250-plus page printed collection of old, new, and unseen comics from Anything About Nothing, which is another web comic collection. And these are very much sort of one-page humour strips, but they are laugh-out-loud humour strips. She's got examples on the actual sort of homepage, and every single one of them made me laugh out loud. I think she's a little bit away from a goal at the moment. I think it's one of those ones that maybe not enough people knew about this. Dan Harris of Loose Cannon told me about this. And it definitely, you know, even if the Kickstarter doesn't make it, I'm now a massive fan of this creator's work. So it's brilliant. It's definitely the humour that we've got on this show, Dan, as well. So
cool.
I'll send you the link for it.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I'll definitely check that one out.
So much to check out this week. much. And Tony, we missed you, but as you can see, we still held the flag high, didn't we? We did comics like no one else could do comics. That's why people listen to this show.
We hopefully did Tony proud. Yeah.
Hopefully we did him proud. God bless him.
You're gonna have a bit of work for that link section, aren't you, Vince?
It's gonna be an absolute nightmare. but it's nice to know, and I've had some people say recently that they checked out the links and they've bought comics because of it. And likewise, people, for instance, at ICE this weekend, definitely were checking out creators after hearing them or hearing about the books on this show.
All the stuff we talk about on the show is in the links. Yeah. So if you want to click on something, see what we've talked about, yeah. click the link, and yeah. boom.
You got your butt out last week, mate.
I know. Thanks, guys. Don't expect any Christmas cards in the mail. But speaking of mail, if you want to let us know what you thought about this episode, then there's several different ways you can do it.
It's such another beautiful segue.
Yeah, beautiful.
A masterclass.
I tell you what, I'm quite proud of myself this week. Are you proud of me, folks? There's several different ways you can let me know. You can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if you've got any other events that we do not know about, Tony always gathers a lovely list for us. You can email tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, @TheAwesomePod, where we'll be sending out links until our face goes blue about the episodes and what's coming up soon. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. I almost forgot what our Facebook URL was called then. it's been a long night. I've been having so much fun talking comics that I've completely forgotten what my brain's supposed to do. facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, where you can check out the latest links for the latest episodes, what we've been talking about this week, or occasionally Tony just posts up a picture of his phone screen. Thank you very much for listening to us, whether it's on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a review. We love you all you lovely people. Thank you for all the wonderful feedback that we get on these shows. Leave us a review on iTunes. It helps get the word out about the show. And that's what this is all about. I mean, we don't get paid for this, you know.
No.
Apart from the money that Fraser's given us this week. And which we haven't received the check yet, by the way, Fraser. We'll talk about it after.
It's just a sock full of pennies, man.
So old school. He's probably just going to beat us to death with it, Dan.
Yeah. Use it on potential intruders.
Leave it lying around the house, just in case.
He's just got like several different socks dotted around the house. I don't need a burglar alarm. yes, leave us a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on Stitcher. Thank you to... I know we've got a few people that listen on Stitcher. So thank you very much for that. All the Podnose Network, which we're now part of now. Thank you very much to the Podnose guys. But where can people find us on Twitter? Daniel Butcher.
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
You can find Tony at EzoYes on Twitter, and you can also find out about his reviews. I have said that right, haven't I?
Yeah.
His reviews and his wonderful articles down on downthetubes.net. Lovely people at Down Tubes. You can find me on Twitter @JesterDiablo. Find out more about my comic at theredmousefrommars.com. Fraser, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter @FraserC69. And find me on Kickstarter under Alex Automatic.
There you go. he's pushing, you know.
Just shameless, really, isn't it?
We're all so shameless on this show. You know what I mean? Yeah, we're all shameless on this show, and so are our listeners. And thank you very much for listening, folks. Hope you had a good one. And from all of us, Fraser, Dan, the Invisible Tony, and myself, have an amazing week and stay awesome. See you guys.
Take care.
Cheers, guys.
Hi, and welcome to episode 63 of the Awesome Comics Podcast. I can't believe I fucked that. I got to redo that.
I could hear that in your voice even before you started speaking.
Right,
you ready? Game face, ready. Game face.
Did you just call me gay face? Right,
game face. Right, okay.